Capital Region. This is the Hudson Mohawk Magazine, broadcasting from the Sanctuary for Independent Media in Troy, New York, on the ancestral and unceded homelands of the Mohican people, who are now known as the Stockbridge Muncie community. I'm Sally Becker.
And I'm Miranda Santos. Today on the Hudson Mohawk Magazine, we begin with a press conference where the public urges New York State to deny the Title V air permit for the Greenwich Cryptonian Currency Power Project. Then we have an interview with Brother Howard Underwood from the Capital City of New York Black Expo. Later on, we learn about some of the work in the Capital Region to support the transgender community and about Transgender Remembrance Day. After that, we get a tour of Jeffrey Gibson's exhibition, To Feel Myself Beloved, at our OMI. Finally, a dig into our archives from 3 years ago for a story about the Thanksgiving dinner at Equinox. But first, here are the headlines.
Charges against a Black Lives Matter protester who was seen in a video being pulled away by city police from her two crying young children was granted an adjournment in contemplation of dismissal on Thursday morning in Saratoga City Court. Gabrielle Elliott, who was arrested with other Black Lives Matter protesters on September 7th, said she is prepared to file a civil suit against the city police for arresting her after she went to the police station that evening to see what had been going on with the children's father, the city's Black Lives Matter leader, Lexis Figueroa, who was also arrested that day for disorderly conduct.
The Times Union reports that a new charter high school designed to prepare students for careers in nursing and other healthcare professions has been approved to open in Albany in the fall of 2022.
Members of the state's Assembly Judiciary Committee on Thursday began reviewing a report prepared by private attorneys who have spent months probing multiple allegations against former Governor Cuomo. The Times Union reports that the report is to be released very soon after the committee's 20 members have had a chance to study it.
The Gazette reports that Samantha Guerra, the losing Republican candidate for the Saratoga Springs City Commissioner of Accounts, appeared in city court Thursday with her lawyer, former Congressman John Sweeney, who called the election fraud case around the candidate a political witch hunt. The case has been assigned to the Schenectady District Attorney to prosecute. Guerra is accused of witnessing false signatures on her independent.
The City of Schenectady Planning Commission appears to have a favorable impression of a pair of proposed apartment developments that will bring nearly 200 living units to the city along Crane Street and Erie Boulevard. The Gazette reports that the proposed project would consist of a workforce housing, which caters to those who earn 60% of the average income in the county. Which is $40,200 for one person in Schenectady County.
Kyle Rittenhouse was acquitted of all charges on Friday after his trial for shooting three people, killing two of them in Kenosha last year. The jury bought his argument that he acted in self-defense after the teenager brought an assault rifle to an out-of-state protest. Racial justice protests are expected to break out nationwide, including one Friday night in Townsend Park in Albany. He had been charged in connection with the shootings of three people in August 2020 during protests over the police shooting of Jacob Blake.
That's it for headlines. For those of you just tuning in, you're listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. Like what you hear, find these stories and more at mediasanctuary.org/stories.
To learn how you can contribute, go to mediasanctuary.org, email us at hmm@mediasanctuary.org, or call 518-272-2390.
On the last day for public comments to DEC, opponents of the Greenwich Crypto Mining Currency Power Project in Seneca area held a press conference urging the state to deny the Title V air permit for the plant. In this news segment, Mark Dunley talks to Liz Moran of New York Public Interest Research Group and Assembly Member Pat Fahey and more.
On November 19th, the final day of the DC public comment period, environmental groups and local residents presented over 5,000 comments made in opposition to the Greenwich facility. This is an old fossil fuel power plant that was brought back online in order to run computers to drive a cryptocurrency mining operation. They are asking the state to deny the Title V air permit for the proof of work cryptocurrency mining facility out by Lake Seneca, and also calling upon Governor Hochul to place a statewide moratorium on this form of cryptocurrency mining until an environmental review can be conducted because of the concerns about the enormous climate impact from increased gas emissions. We hear first from Liz Moran of Earth Justice.
Given the immense climate and local air impacts from Greenwich's Bitcoin mining operation, which utilizes proof-of-work cryptocurrency mining technology, as DEC has stated, this facility has not demonstrated how it will align with the crucial climate goals of the Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act. This facility's air emissions have been growing since it has been converted to a proof-of-work cryptocurrency mining operation. For a period between 2011 to 2016, this facility had zero emissions, but that was before it was brought back online as a proof-of-work cryptocurrency mining facility. Ever since, carbon emissions have been growing. For the period of 2020, carbon dioxide emissions were over 228,000 short tons. And the problem is not just with carbon emissions. There are also sulfide oxide and nitrogen oxide emissions. The facility will speak of carbon neutrality and purchasing carbon offsets, but this is expressly not allowed in the state climate law for the electricity sector. Additionally, carbon offsets do not help the communities surrounding Greenwich who have to deal with the increasing SOx and NOx emissions. Not only should New York State resoundingly deny this permit, but the state must also address proof-of-work cryptocurrency mining on a statewide scale. This is a rapidly growing industry, and studies have found that its energy-consumptive nature alone could push the globe above the goal of 1.5 degrees Celsius of warming. The expansion of this industry stands to jeopardize New York State's ability to meet the important Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act goals. Now I'd like to welcome Assemblymember Pat Fahey for her remarks.
The bottom line is, this is no time to go backwards. I say all the time, I was so proud to support the climate goals over two years ago now. And whether people supported those or opposed those, just about everybody agreed they were pretty darn ambitious, the goals that we adopted here in New York State. No time to go backwards on those. We're committed to it. We need to do all we can to reach those goals. This will send us backwards. This is the right bill at the right time. What we are saying is hit a serious pause. We're asking the new administration to hit a serious pause here and give us a chance. As my colleague Steve Otis said, this is not a comment about cryptocurrency. We know it is growing. We know that there may be lots of potential here. It is this proof of work, the mining, that is causing such serious problems, and it really threatens the goals that not only that we have here in New York, but throughout the country, if not the world, which is why you are seeing alarms beginning to be raised at the national level, by Janet Yellen and others, as well as internationally. And so I do love when New York leads.
Connor Brambrick spoke on behalf of environmental advocates.
I think we've all heard here, it's pretty clear that the operations at Greenwich are inconsistent with the state's climate law, and the DEC should be rejecting it on that basis alone. I want to speak a little bit to the concept that Liz just brought up earlier. The rejection of the repowering projects at Danskammer and Astoria from a few weeks ago. Those plants were rejected because they did not meet the state's climate law. It is ridiculous right now that we have a situation where it is easier for an old, retired, inefficient plant just to flip a switch to run an operation like this than it is to get a solar farm sited in New York. Mm-hmm. We have very strong siting laws in place that should be governing how these plants should be operating, and they should have to go through those all those same processes that our wind and solar and even new fossil plants have to go through. We already saw here with Dan Scammer in Astoria that new or repowered fossil plants are inconsistent with the climate law. That same standard should be applied to old retired plants.
Russ Havens speaks next. Russ Havens speaks next for the New York Public Interest Research Group.
So the proposal that we're commenting on, the Greenidge proposal, is really a bait and switch proposal, or maybe it's a Trojan horse. Essentially what they're doing is trying to dress up a power plant in a new technology and bootstrap the old permit, which provided grid reliability and was intended to be part of our electric system statewide. They're intending to use that as a way to sneak in this for-profit Bitcoin mining plant. And given that there's perhaps 13 of these mothballed facilities around the state, it's of great concern. If this is to be replicated, then the climate law is in serious jeopardy. While blockchain technology, which is sort of the underpinning for cryptocurrency, may well be here to stay. There's certainly useful applications we may see for it. But when you have an energy hogging program like the proof of work type of crypto mining, that just blows our energy goals out of the water. If it's allowed to operate, the Greenwich Power Plant Station Bitcoin mining plant will drive a superhighway through the state's climate law. Based on the DEC's recent permit denials for the Astoria Frack gas plant and the Dan Scammer project in Newburgh, the Greenwich Bitcoin plant must be rejected as a climate killer. So we're urging the governor and the Department of Environmental Conservation to reject this plant. We'd recommend, in addition to the legislative proposals, which NYPERG supports, that there be a generic environmental impact statement looking at this technology and its potential impacts. The plant will contribute more greenhouse gas emissions, both directly and when you look at the life cycle of creating the fuel, than they've been emitting in recent years. So we can't meet our climate goals if we keep adding more intensive fossil fuel demanding, greenhouse gas spewing facilities. This plant must be rejected.
My name is Eric Weltman, and I'm a Brooklyn-based senior organizer with Food and Water Watch. Proud to join Environmental Advocates of New York, NYPERG, and our champions in the legislature today in sending a message to Governor Hochul. No fracked gas for cryptocurrency mining. The decision over Greenwich's permit is an important test of Governor Hochul's leadership on climate and her commitment to moving New York off fossil fuels. It is essential that Governor Hochul block this fracked gas power plant and halt any new fossil fuel infrastructure in New York. The science is clear, and so are Governor Hochul's moral and legal obligations. New York must move off fossil fuels, and that means stopping the Greenwich power plant. It is also essential that Governor Hochul press her fingers on the pause button on all such projects, which could decimate the prospect of meeting New York's climate goals. We need Governor Hochul to institute a statewide moratorium on proof-of-work cryptocurrency, and we need her to do it now. New York banned fracking, but we remain threatened by an onslaught of pipelines and power plants that transport and burn fracked gas. Several weeks ago, Governor Hochul blocked fracked gas projects in Newburgh and Queens. Now Governor Hochul must take the next step now and prevent dozens of dormant power plants from being revived from the dead for cryptocurrency mining.
This has been Mark Dunley for the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network.
That was Liz Moran of NYPERG, Assemblymember Pat Fahey, Connor Bambrick of Environmental Advocates, Russ Haven of NYPIRG, and Eric Weltman of Food and Water Watch.
On November 13, 2021, the Hudson Mohawk Magazine roaming labor correspondent Willie Terry attended the capital city of New York Black Expo, where he spoke with Brother Howard Underwood, a musician and songwriter.
Terry, a Roman labor correspondent here at the Black Expo. And I'm in the lobby where there's a gentleman playing an instrument that he says is from Africa. And I'm going to talk to him more about this instrument. And his name is
Howard Underwood.
How you doing, Howard?
All right, yourself.
So Howard, what's this instrument you're playing? Tell me something about it.
The instrument is originally from Nigeria, but this was made in the States by a gentleman in Mexico. But he basically, what he does is he goes over, learns the skills of making kalimbas, or they call them lamellophones. This is a larger kalimba, so it's called lamellophone. And the reason, I guess, they call it lamellophone because it's a cross between a vibraphone and a xylophone and a kalimba. So you got those three instruments that are mixed into this one. Mm-hmm. But it's just a large instrument, a lot of low bass notes you can get on it. A lot of nice melodies.
So you play with a group?
I play off and on. I used to play with a band one group I played with. People might remember this group, Sweet Magic. I played with that group for about 15, 20 years. Uh-huh. Another group, Pangea, out of Saratoga, I played with them about the same length of time. I played with pretty much a lot of different people in the area. John Hilton, Azam Hamid. I do a thing with Washington Park, Rumberos in Washington Park in Albany. We do a drum circle. I don't like to say a drum circle, but we do drumming. And then today we're doing a thing here at the Expo. I helped a friend out. He reached out, needed some help, so I'm helping him out with the drumming. I'm pretty much freelancer, you know, independent. Somebody called me to need something to done, if I'm free, I'll jump on it.
So what other instruments do you play?
Here's my thing. I use a lot of different instruments to write my music. I play keyboards.
You're a writer.
Writer. I play keyboards, guitar, percussion, vocals. I arrange my own stuff. Only thing I don't do, I play bass. I'm not very good at far as putting music to my vocals. Once I lay the vocals down, I have a problem with that. But pretty much, I just use the instruments for writing. Keyboards, pretty much do all my own playing, all my music. So
just give me a little bit of your history of how you, that brought you to, you know, doing this.
Oh, my history is deep. History is long, brother.
That's what I tell
you, where you born? I was born in Jacksonville, Florida. So we came. I've been here in Albany since I was maybe 10 years old, and lived uptown, downtown. I started at Philip Livingston School, where I took violin lessons. That's the first instrument I took when I came to Albany, was violin. Then I took sax, got into various different groups in the area when I was young.
So how did you come up here? You know,
well, my mom was here first, and she sent for us. My mom's came up here. She was up here like a year before, or 2 years before me and my brother came here. So it was like getting used to the north, because down south.
Why did you leave?
Well, because I had some illnesses, like I had allergies.
I'm saying your mother, she came up here.
Oh, my mother was coming up here to better educate herself. She was going to school, college up here, so she came up here. And we stayed with my grandmother until things were straight in the north. And then she sent for us. And ever since then, it's been like moving. Music has always been with me. So from junior high school, elementary school, I took choir in high school, took band in high school, sung in quite a few singing groups. So music has always been a part of my life since I've been here in Albany.
So did you make a career out of it, or you had to?
Well, I tried to. I gave that a shot before I was trying to make it, taking it to the next level. Like I said, it's rough out there trying to get in the music business. Right. You either got to know somebody or be persistent constantly. Uh-huh. And I was for a while, but that's why you get beat up, you know, just uh-huh. constantly sending out demos and nope, nothing's happening. Tell you to listen to the radio. Hey, listen to the radio more. But I kept writing, you know, I didn't stop writing. I still write to this day.
Uh-huh. Is it in your song? Is it producing
this? I'm working on that. Oh, okay. I got two CDs right now, and I'm going to take those two CDs and have someone take the best songs off of the two and just make one CD. That's mm-hmm. all. So that's coming mm-hmm. very soon. Mm-hmm. But that's what I do. I just stay busy writing. And when somebody asks me to help them out, I help them out. If they got a show, I'll help them do a show. Somebody call me to do a gig, I'll do a gig if I'm free. So. Mm-hmm. I'm pretty much.
Do you and your other brothers or sisters?
Oh, I have a brother, two brothers. Mm-hmm. They're down south. Both of them are musicians. Both musicians. One's in a singing group. One plays flute. He was in a group. But married life sort of strayed him away from that. I have other brothers and siblings as musicians. So two of them musicians. But basically that's it for me as far as the music history. I'm still plugging. I don't give up.
Right.
I just keep hanging in there. I'm 71. I'm still trying to get my music heard and out there. So.
You know, I asked you that question about your mother, you know, why this question came up. Because I know back in that time, you know, in Florida and probably all down south, it was a segregation.
Oh, heavily racist, brother.
Right, racist. A lot of people just left.
Yeah, well, that's a lot of people left for that too. But I mean, but I had to leave because of illnesses. I had a lot of sickness that wake up with eyes swollen, hay fever, allergies. But it was a lot of that. I was there when you had to sit in the back of the bus.
Right.
I was there when you had colored fountains, white fountains. Yeah, I was there doing all that. So, but yeah, it's a big difference when I got here. Like I said, it was like a culture shock when I got to Albany. It was. Yeah.
Do you remember a group called The Brothers?
The Brothers?
Yeah, in Albany.
In Albany, yeah. Back in the day. Yeah. Was an activist group, pretty much.
Yeah,
I remember The Brothers, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, they had, back in the day, they had a lot of groups that were trying to do things, but after a while you sort of get tired and you see where it ain't going nowhere and you're getting a lot mm-hmm. of flack. So a lot of groups broke up, disbanded. Yeah, but this expo here to me is like it's something to look forward to in the future, you know. I talked to the young lady, she said they're gonna try to keep building on this. Every time they have it, they're gonna try to make it larger than the last time. So that's a beautiful thing.
So do you feel that Black Club gaining anything in terms of, you know, breaking out and doing business here?
It's slow. They got a long way to go, believe me. I mean, I see some progress being made, especially with the young folks.
Right.
The young folks are putting a little bit more step into it as far as when I was coming up. We gave it a shot, but we just gave up too quick. Now the young people are doing a lot more things that I see than we did. You know, this 518 is all you hear, the 518, and they got a lot of different activities going on and things that they do. I like that. So I still try to stay in locked stock with the younger people, you know, as far as keeping up with the music and find out what the trend is, so I don't get lost, left in the dust. So I try to keep up.
Well, you know, a lot of young people want to be rappers and different things.
Yeah,
what kind of message you would have if young people who might want to come into this business?
I don't have anything against rap music. Mm-hmm. I like rap. Matter of fact, I like rapping myself. My thing is the message. If it's nothing that you have to say that's positive or that's going to uplift people, to me, it's just a bunch of words that you got and you're making money off of. My thing is about message. You know, people being able to tell somebody something and they gain something from that. Take it and pass it on to somebody else. And rapping, I don't have no problem with rapping. I just don't like the profanity and how they denigrate women in the rap music, so I have a real problem with that.
So when you write your songs and stuff,
stuff definitely got to be on message, on point. Now, if it ain't helping you, I don't want to, I got to give you some sort of uplift. So that's what I do.
Yeah, we have another Juneteenth. Do you ever play during the Juneteenth?
Oh yeah, Juneteenth, yeah, definitely do that. I did that last year. Yeah, I did Juneteenth.
Mm-hmm.
Did it the year before.
Yeah, they had the Juneteenth, and then they also had the African American Day Parade. But then they had it since COVID.
COVID. I always try to stay active with the community.
Right.
You got something? I'm free, I'm on it. Right.
That's good to know, man.
Yeah, it ain't always about no money either. It's just about giving back, you know what I mean? Just putting something back into the community.
Right. And it's good for young people seeing something positive.
Positive, yeah.
Because one day they're going to be old.
There you go. You got to walk in my shoes.
Right,
you
got to walk in your shoes. Right. And mine.
Yeah, yours too.
All right, great. I want to thank you.
Man. All right, my man. As always, whenever I see you, we can always chat.
That was Hudson Mohawk Magazine correspondent Willie Terry talking to brother Howard Underwood at the Black Expo. Black Expo promotes economic and business opportunities in communities throughout New York State.
For those of you just tuning in, I'm Sally Becker.
And I'm Miranda Santos. You're listening to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine on the Hudson Mohawk Radio Network on WOOCLP 105.3 FM Troy, WOOSLP 98.9 FM Schenectady, WOOALP 106.9 FM Albany, and WCAALP 107.3 FM Albany.
This program comes from the Sanctuary for Independent Media in Troy, New York, on the ancestral and unceded homelands of the Mohican people, who are now known as the Stockbridge-Munsee community.
Hudson Mohawk Magazine's Elizabeth Press spoke with Julius Faulkner, the Trans Care Program Coordinator at In Our Voices, about his work supporting the transgender community in the Capital Region, the Transgender Day of Remembrance, and more.
Today, I'm joined by Julius Faulkner, the Trans Care Program Coordinator at In Our Own Voices. Julius, welcome to the Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
Thank you so much. I'm very excited to be here.
So today we're talking about the Transgender Day of Remembrance and some of the events that are coming up. But first, what is the Transgender Day of Remembrance?
It's a day meant to memorialize those who have been murdered as a result of transphobia. Originally, the day started in 1999 by transgender activist Gwendolyn Ann Smith to honor Rita Hester, who was unfortunately murdered connected to trans-related violence. And so Transgender Day of Remembrance really just brings an intentional focus on the issues and concerns facing the transgender, gender nonconforming, and non-binary communities that we face each and every day.
The Transgender Day of Remembrance is celebrated all over the country, all over the world. And In Our Own Voices is hosting an event on Saturday, November 20th. Can you tell us about this specific event and why, in general, it's important for different localities to mark the day, this day?
Sure. So as part of Trans Awareness Week, towards the end of Trans Awareness Week is Transgender Day of Remembrance on November 20th. So on November 20th, on Saturday at 6 p.m., we will be hosting a memorial style event where a eulogy will be given to acknowledge the grief that we carry as a united community. And then we will have BHAWK Snipes doing a reading of the names. And BHAWK Snipes is an award-winning social activist and entertainment and model from New York City. They're on a mission to conjure honest and captivating projects to explore diversity within the arts through a queer and trans lens. And you can see them as BB Penn Davis on the hit show Pose, and currently watch them host their hit show, The Word, on Instagram Live with Jewel the Gem. BHAWK is also one of the board members for the BTFA Collective, which helps Black trans femmes succeed in arts. And if you'd like to know more, they encourage you to Google them. They will be saying a few words regarding remaining connected and united as a community, which will then lead into the reading of the names. And I think that this is one of the most significant parts of Transgender Day of Remembrance, since we are aware that the names and pronouns that we carry aren't always honored, even in death. So it's only right to hold space in this way. We will also be holding space for those who have passed due to the COVID-19 pandemic, the HIV and AIDS epidemic, and suicide. And these are all epidemics that are impacting our community. We will beforehand be hosting a testing clinic from 11 a.m. to 3 p.m. at 245 Lark Street. And as a part of the Ending the HIV Epidemic Initiative, we are committed to providing access for testing for the community.
Are there specific people in the Capital Region that you want to highlight in terms of folks that will be remembered on the Transgender Day of Remembrance?
We had some recent folks pass locally, and we will be giving space and honor to those. Recently, over the past year, we lost a member who was very close and a few of our support groups. I'm not really sure if I want to give their name on this recording, but we are going to intentionally hold space since they were around in our own voices since its very beginning, its very conception. So to no longer have them here and to have their passing before they were really able to reach and embrace their full authenticity, we're definitely allowing space for and recognition for.
Thanks, Julius. And you noted that the Transgender Day of Remembrance is the culmination of a week of acknowledgement, of celebration. What else happened in the region during the week leading up to November 20th?
Well, we've had some recent artists as well as folks in the broader community show a few different memorial style and altar style events locally. We also have noticed allies taking a intention with providing and giving roses to folks while we are still here. And that is in the way of giving and offering affirmations to trans people that they know professionally and personally, as well as openly, and per saying that their agencies, their organizations, their corporate offices are safe spaces for the transgender community. I've also seen folks take a interest in doing trainings and participating in trainings that are more trans inclusive locally. So there's been many different ways where a Trans Awareness Week, there's been a light shined on. And I think that you can show up for the community in so many different ways.
And the event on Saturday is called Liberation for All, Freedom to Thrive. Are there details that you can share with our audience if people want to participate or show up at the event?
Yeah, so if you would like to come to our event, please log on to our Facebook page, In Our Own Voices, Inc., or on our Instagram page, and you can click on our Eventbrite, and that will allow you to RSVP and to choose whether you want to stream or come in person. There's only 50 slots, though, so I hope you RSVP quickly.
Okay, and Julius Faulkner, you are the Trans Care Program Coordinator at In Our Own Voices in Albany. Can you just tell us a little bit about what your role at In Our Own Voices entails and some of the services you all provide for the LGBTQ community?
Absolutely. So as the Trans Care Program Coordinator, I centrally focus on supporting and advocating for the transgender, gender nonconforming, and non-binary community. And that looks like a few different ways. I provide support groups. Two of our support groups are called Voices of Unity and Sex Transstations. Voices of Unity is more of a social mutual aid support group where we just delve into like various hot topics and conversations with community members that all identify as trans. And for sex transstations, that's more of a 18 and up, more mature support group where the focus is just about sex, sexual health, different consent and negotiation. We just cover a variety of different topics in sex transstations. I also support the community by doing HIV and hepatitis C testing, currently by appointment only, but we do have walk-ins available on our Saturday, November 20th testing clinic. I also provide support with linkage and navigation and referral services. So if a person of that's trans identified calls In Our Own Voices looking for support for hormone replacement therapy, or just has some questions on what transition services can look like, and or maybe general questions of looking for some community support or aid, they would be referred to me as well.
Great. And as we start to wrap up this interview, Julius, is there anything that we haven't covered related to In Our Own Voices or your work in the community that you want to share with us tonight?
just that we are continually on day three tomorrow for our Unity Through Diversity Conference, which is our biannual health conference, POC centered and focused. And it's been an amazing conference so far. We had a keynote speaker, Cecilia Gentili, who is the CEO and founder of Trans Equity Consulting in New York City. And she is just such a powerhouse. And just to hear her life experience just connected to her work is just truly, truly amazing. So I invite all folks that if you can check out Unity Through Diversity.
Excellent. Julius Faulkner, the Trans Care Program Coordinator with In Our Own Voices. Thank you for joining us today on Hudson Mohawk Magazine.
That was Elizabeth Press speaking with Julius Faulkner. The Transgender Day of Remembrance happens annually on November 20th to honor the memory of transgender people whose lives were lost.
To Feel Myself Beloved on the Earth is the exhibition by Jeffrey Gibson currently on view at Art Omai. Nicole Hayes, curator and project manager of the Sculpture and Architecture Park, gave HMM Sina Basilahicki a tour of the exhibition, which is on view until January 2nd, and possibly a week longer.
This is Hudson Mohawk Magazine correspondent Sina Basilahicki, and we are outside of the Benenson Center at Art Omai.
Yeah, my name is Nicole Hayes, and I'm curator in the Sculpture and Architecture Park here at Art Omai.
How would you introduce Jeffrey Gibson's exhibition, To Feel Myself Beloved on the Earth?
Jeffrey Gibson is a Choctaw Cherokee artist who works in multimedia, a lot of craft media you see in his work. In this exhibition, we're showing a video work that was filmed here at Art Omai in 2020, the summer fall of the pandemic year. We also have a series of silkscreen works that you're seeing out here in the lobby that incorporate language and really bright contrasting color, really dramatic design elements. Inside the gallery, you're going to see drums, garments that were used in the video production, as well as a series of quilt works that were produced here in the Hudson Valley at Jeffrey's studio in Claverick.
Is this I Wanna Gimme You?
This one says, I Wanna Give You Devotion. So you see a lot of text in works throughout the exhibition, the quilts, the garments, the drums, the silk screens, and the text is derived from soul music, things that are repeated in protests, sort of protest chants, as well as poetry and Jeffrey's own words. All of this text kind of takes a moment to reveal itself. So it's kind of hidden in the pattern and the shapes and the colors. So making me really think about, you know, just this notion that text is always abstraction, right? It's like our brain has learned to see these elements on the page as text, but he's kind of challenging us to give our brain a second to adjust. And thinking about, you know, who operates language and who allows us to see language, and perhaps relating that back to his Cherokee descendant, you know, and thinking of their relationship with language, both written and oral language. So when we enter the gallery, we have two more prints on the left wall, The Future is Present and Know You Are Magic Baby. So, you know, I think that this all starts kind of relating back to, so we're going to this title, To Feel Myself Beloved of the Earth. And then we have all of this other text kind of inspiring us and kind of moving us along. And for me, a lot of what this exhibition really relates directly to that title, which is also the title of the video work, which is kind of the center of the exhibition, and what it means to feel yourself beloved of the earth. So coming into the gallery, then we move around and we're seeing a quilt work, really working in a very traditional kind of quilting way. Within this one quilt, you see more text-based textiles. There's also a series of imagery of porcupine quills throughout them, and also images of performers that have worked with Jeffrey in the past. So, you know, I think this is another way, in addition to working with all of these people in his studio, he's also employing performers, and a lot of those are also Native people, and kind of always expanding his circle. So he has his practice, but he's always inviting other people in to create work with him, and so it kind of becomes this expanding spiral. So kind of taking his spot and then going outwards from that.
So now we're looking at the center of the room. This is kind of the centerpiece. What are we seeing over here?
So in the center of the room here, there's a stage, essentially. And this, in a way, is like a visual on the ground, like representation of what is happening in the video work. We can kind of hear this drumming from the video in the background. And on this kind of stage, almost as this altar kind of feeling to it, we're seeing five garments that were used in the video production. And these garments, again, are made out of a printed material designed by the artist. But then on top of that printed material, there's a lot of elaborate stitching that happens in his studio with his assistants, where they're stitching continually over and over and over this material to make it less like a just kind of hanging fabric and more of a sculptural element. It kind of gives the fabric this crunchy form that almost feels like, you know, kind of hanging, they have this feeling like they're almost like moving through water or moving through space. And so these garments are hung on these custom hangers from the ceiling so that we kind of get that sense of like a vessel with a body in it moving through space. And then on the platform are a series of drums that are made from 50-gallon buckets like you would find at the hardware store. Most of them look like they've been previously used. We've got like a plaster bucket and a joint compound bucket. And then on top of those is they are traditionally skinned with deer hide. And that is laid over the top and then painted with the same kind of words that we saw in the prints: time to heal, a time for change, rise up. And then those are elaborately painted in really multicolored hues. So one thing you also see throughout this show is there's just a lot of color. And yet somehow with really using like a true rainbow of color in all of these works, there's these two large red walls in the gallery and this gray painted floor that kind of unite all those colors together. It's this kind of magic of this show that even though we have tremendous amounts of color, it feels unified somehow. And I think the stage with the red really kind of shows that off.
So the video is playing in a part of the room that has its own little mini theater with the dark walls, and the video's playing. Goes from an urban setting to an outdoor setting. We see New York City and nature. There's the garments in there. There's dancing. So is anything with woods, is that filmed on Art Omi, and everything urban is filmed in New York City?
Exactly. So, you know, there was a moment where Jeff had originally planned to go back to Oklahoma to film this video. And, you know, in the summer of 2020, the idea of traveling just became more difficult, right? So he decided to kind of go inward and look at spaces around here. Jeff was actually an alumni of our artist in residency program. So we've had a really long relationship with him. I feel like the video for me captures so much of like that moment that we were in 2020 that we're still sorting ourselves through, of this kind of perilous moment of not really understanding what was going to be happening in terms of the pandemic, but also the civil unrest. And I feel like the video really looks at that. You get this sort of ominous feeling of everything that's like brewing right underneath the surface, but then there's these joyous dancers, or these dancers kind of running through the countryside, manipulating themselves over a log. And you get this sense of struggle, but also this joy at the same time. And I think that's what's so special about Jeffrey's work, that he can look at the difficulty that we see ourselves in, that we face, but also imbue it with all of this hope, and that we get a great sense of just hope that there is a way out of this, and that comes coming together and cherishing each other, we've got a way to kind of start plotting our way out of the mire that we are in.
So with garments and as the centerpiece, often fashion is seen as its own category within art. How is fashion a part of identity and a part of the Art Oh My exhibition?
Yeah, I mean, it's interesting because I have never worked with garments in an exhibition before. They might not really show themselves as a garment at first. They really kind of look like a sculptural object. So first there was just the challenge to make sure that they read as a garment. I mean, I really see them as being a record of a performance more than anything. And I kind of imagine them embodying the performer, the dancer that was actually wearing the garment in the film. The exhibition remains on view at least till January 3rd, which might go another week till the 9th, but certainly you have through the holidays to come and see the show. You know, a universal thing between all people is that we all want to feel like we belong, that we are loved, that we are seen as part of our community, part of the place where we live. And I feel like this exhibition is really kind of pushing that idea that all of us want that feeling of belonging and to feel beloved, no matter who you are, where you come from, how you identify yourself. We all deserve that basic right.
Jeffrey Gibson's exhibition is at Art Oh My. More information at artomai.org.
And for our last segment, we'll be going into our archives from 3 years ago, where Willie Terry reported from the Equinox Thanksgiving dinner.
Roman correspondent Willie Terry. I'm here at the Equinox annual Thanksgiving dinner at the First Presbyterian Church of Albany. And I have as my guest...
My name is Christina Rajat.
And Christina, we're here at the, this is the Equinox annual Thanksgiving dinner.
That's correct. This is the 49th annual Equinox Thanksgiving community dinner, and we're excited to be at the First Presbyterian Church here in Albany with hundreds of volunteers and hundreds of guests enjoying a wonderful Thanksgiving meal, but also camaraderie and being together and celebrating Thanksgiving and appreciating what we have.
Tell me something, how did you get involved in this?
Yep. I actually work for Equinox. I'm the Director of Development and Community Relations, and Equinox is the coordinating organization that does this, and I've been doing it for 6 years. So we only have two staff members, myself and my colleague Rachel Carey, who oversees this, and it takes us and 3,600 volunteers to make this dinner a reality.
Now, that 3,600 volunteers, is that included the church and delivering the...
Yes. Yeah, what it is we have, we make 10,000 meals. Of the 10,000, this year 9,600 meals were delivered throughout the greater capital region within a 40-mile radius of Albany. The remaining meals, which is about approximately 500 meals, we make as a sit-down dinner for folks to come to the First Presbyterian Church to enjoy.
Where do you get the resources for doing all this?
We're very blessed with this community. The Capital Region community is so caring and generous that we have nearly 300 businesses, organizations, schools, congregations, local farmers that donate most of the food as well as the supplies to make the dinner. But also the community gives cash donations as well to help offset the cost. This isn't a fundraiser, you know, for Equinox. Some people think that. This is a genuine community effort and a community service project. All of us give back and being thankful.
Now, what effort goes into making the dinner here at the church? What effort do you go into getting that in?
Yep. Well, first for the food preparation, we prepare all the food, even for the church down at the Empire State Plaza, because OGS, New York State Office of General Services, are gracious to allow us to use their catering kitchens and a lot of their facilities to prep for the meal. So without them, we wouldn't have kitchens big enough to hold that capacity. We start making the food, cooking and prepping with all the volunteers the Sunday before Thanksgiving, and cook right up to last evening and preparing all the pies and everything else that we need for the dinner. So with that said, it takes about, what, 4 days to make all the food for 10,000 meals. And then we have a volunteer who's a key volunteer who brings all the family style meals for the sit down dinner right up here to the church. And we have many other volunteers too that help serve here. And it's also not only prepping the food, but it's also coordinating and recruiting volunteers to help out. And one good thing is we never have problems getting volunteers. People just enjoy this. And again, being in the community for this long, this dinner, it shows you how cherished it is. And people look forward to helping out and being a part of it.
So give me your perspective on this Thanksgiving Day.
Well, one of the things is that it really warms your heart when you see all the goodness that comes from this. It renews your faith in humankind, especially when you turn on the TV, open the newspaper, or watch online the news, all the tragedies nationwide, but also globally that's going on, to know that there is still goodness there, and to have, especially when the media highlights the goodness, we like getting that word out that this is a great community to be in, and there are a lot of good things going on.
Is there anything like this in other areas like Rensselaer or Saratoga County?
Not to this extent. You have some churches and some other small organizations through different counties that might do a smaller dinner, but this dinner is one of the largest and longest running Thanksgiving dinners in the nation. So we're very pleased to have that badge of honor. But again, it's this community that has made this a milestone of 50 years next year. So without them, we couldn't be this successful in being able to support our community.
So what are some of the other activities that Equinox do during the year?
Yeah. You know, I'm glad you asked that. Everyone seems to know Equinox for the annual Thanksgiving dinner, but 365 days a year, we're in this community providing compassionate services and life-enhancing opportunities to youth and adults that are impacted by domestic violence, substance use disorders, mental health disorders, or just being homeless, or some of our at-risk youth who are growing up amidst poverty and violence, giving them the opportunities, smart kids that want a different life, be on a better path, and being independent and productive individuals. So we do that 365 days a year, so we're very pleased. But again, Equinox couldn't do that alone without this community who embraces our mission and supports us throughout the year, not just at Thanksgiving time.
And any of our listeners that are listening, how would they get in contact with you if they want to, volunteer or provide support or just get more information about?
Yeah. Well, if they want more information about Equinox itself, they can go to our website at equinoxinc.org. We also have a Facebook page, Equinox Albany, that they can see all the different things that are going on. On our website, they can donate if they want. There's also volunteer opportunities listed there for throughout the year if there's other types of opportunities. But for the Thanksgiving dinner, if they want to volunteer or request a meal, we have a special Thanksgiving hotline, which opens up usually mid-October. Although we do get some folks that will call in the summer because they can't wait to sign up and leave a voicemail message, and we will get back to them. But the hotline number is 518-434-0131. So whether you want to volunteer or request the meal, that's how they'd get in touch with us for the Thanksgiving dinner.
Okay. All right. Thank you for that information.
Thank you.
And I have as my guest Lori Randall.
Yep.
And Lori, you are from the Capital District?
Yes, I am.
Oh, okay. And Lori, what's your volunteer duties here today?
Well, I came early this morning for setup, and then as the meal started, just was in the replenishment line, and then came down to the dessert and coffee station to help out here.
Okay. And Lori, how long you been doing this?
This is my first year.
The first year?
Yes.
And what's the reason that you get up on a 2-degree day to come here?
Well, for me, this year was a challenging year for myself. And so for Thanksgiving, I wanted to give back and do something helpful in the community, and just sort of keep myself humble and thankful that there's always someone else that could use some help as well.
Okay, so you think we'll see you here next year?
Yes, definitely. It's been great.
All right. Thank you, Laura. Yeah. What's your name?
Dina.
Dina? And Dina, you're one of the volunteers?
I am.
Right, and how long have you been doing this, Dina?
About 27 years.
Oh, that long. Oh. So this event been going on for quite a while.
Yes, mm-hmm. Sure has.
Mm-hmm. And Dina, what is your duties today in terms of volunteering?
I'm kind of doing everything. Whatever they need, I'm doing.
Okay, I see you
hand
with the
out plates. Yep, hand out plates, silverware.
And Dina, what kind of food do they serve?
I have mashed potatoes. We've got green beans, carrots. We've got ham, we've got turkey, we've got stuffing, and we have gravy. And then we have downstairs, we have what we call Pie Heaven, cookies, pies, brownies, coffee. We have juice, milk.
So it's enough food that Nobody shouldn't be hungry today.
No, nobody should be hungry today. We've been busy today, too.
Busy. About how many people y'all think you
usually see? Three to 400. Mm-hmm. That's about average. I would say probably a little more today.
Mm-hmm. Go ahead and ask me anything you want.
All right. What's your first name?
Gail.
Oh, Gail?
Gail.
Oh, okay. Gail, how did you enjoy the meal today?
Okay.
I mean, it was a lot of food?
Yes, it was a lot of food. But the only thing they didn't have that I like the most is sweet potatoes or yams. I'm not a potato fanatic because I don't like potatoes, so I don't eat them. And the turkey, I can leave it or take it. But the yams, if they had yams with a whole bunch of gravy and vegetables, I'm game with that one.
So you think this is something that very important to the community that they should do every year?
Yes, it is. Yes, it is. Yes, it is. This is my second time here. Normally, I wouldn't be here because I've only been in Albany for a year and 10 months. So, yes, it is. It's very blessing that they can do this for the people that don't have anything. And it's good that people can get around and communicate with the other people at the tables and stuff like that. Yes, I do. Yes, I do.
All right. All right. Thank you. And what's your name?
Jack Fish.
Jack Fish?
Yes.
And Jack, you're one of the volunteers?
Yes, I am.
All right. And how many years have you been volunteering for this?
Probably about 6 years now.
Mm-hmm. And Jack, why do you think it's important that we have events like this?
Now, we take care of our friends. We take care of one another. And I think by volunteering, I think that we're doing that, you know.
Mm-hmm. And about how many people y'all serve today, Jack?
I think over 200 today.
And they really enjoy the people?
The people really do enjoy it. They enjoy coming in out of the cold, and the food is very good, and they enjoy the volunteers, and the volunteers enjoy them. So.
All right. Thank you, Jack.
Thank you.
That was from our archives in 2018 with Willie Terry. We hope everyone has food access this Thanksgiving. Happy Thanksgiving. That concludes our show. We hope you've enjoyed this episode of the Hudson Mohawk Magazine. I'm Sally Becker.
And I'm Miranda Santos. Our engineer is Sina Basila. This program is produced entirely by volunteers. To learn how you can contribute to local stories of social and environmental justice, email us at hmm@mediasanctuary.org. or join our weekly virtual Zoom meetings on Monday nights at 7:07 p.m. Thank you to all our volunteers and sanctuary sustainers. If you value independent media, consider a gift of a monthly donation as a sanctuary sustainer by going to mediasanctuary.org.
Tune in every weekday at 7 a.m., 9 a.m., and 6 p.m. to hear local news and stream sanctuary radio at mediasanctuary.org. You can find all these stories from today's program on our website, through our Hudson Mohawk Magazine podcast, and on our Facebook page at Hudson Mohawk Magazine. Until next time, folks, thanks for tuning in.